Hello, you're on Solidarity Breakfast with Anila and Toby. Now, a bit of a change of pace from our discussions about international relations. We're coming back home and talking about the climate and the environment.
Just so, before, if you are interested in that amazing Ethiopian cover of War Pigs, that was a band called You Can Dance. It's a crazy, they're like got saxophones. It's a big band, but they do all old rock and roll and heavy metal covers.
Amazing. So, Toby, did you want to start us off by having a bit of a chat about some of the concerns that have been raised by local environmental groups about upcoming proposed or planned burnings in Snowy National Park?
Yeah, so from the desk of Gecko, which is the Goongra Environment Centre, they released a little report on what they claim the burning industry being out of control, saying that the Forest Fire Management Victoria are preparing to burn 60,000 hectares inside the Snowy National Park. They give a bit of a comparison to show just how big that is. So they say that it's bigger than the entire size of Wilson's Promontory National Park, which is pretty scary to think that it's that big. And they are saying that it's not in line with what some of these sensitive environments need, that there are a lot of really sensitive, rare bits of East Gippsland rainforest that are actually under threat here, and that they're not the forests that contribute to fuel load when it does come to fire season.
And I think also, you know, I think most ecologists and also members of Indigenous communities recognise the role that burnings can play in maintaining a healthy ecosystem. But the problem seems to be, and this is something that has been raised by other ecologists outside of the work that Gecko is doing, that there is mismanagement occurring around the frequency of burnings and which sites are being chosen to conduct burnings in, at the kind of cost of damaging biodiversity. So after the bushfires in 2020, there was actually a bit of a review done of the effects of planned burnings on biodiversity following bushfire. And it was found that parts of Australia, or parts of the bush that had frequent burnings, so three or more fires in the last 40 years before the 2020 bushfire season, had a negative impact on biodiversity 87 to 93% larger than areas that had only burnt once or not at all in the same period. And so some of these reports have been suggesting that currently we have burning management that tends to have burns every 6 to 8 years, and it seems like, you know, a more responsible use of burning as a management tool would be a window of 10 to 20 years. So I think there have been a few different parts of the environmental and ecological kind of community in Australia that have been suggesting that we need to have a bit of a rethink about how we're applying planned burnings as a bushfire management strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone does the acknowledgement of country, but just seems silly that no one actually ask them what would be appropriate, really.
Well, I think that some of the bushfire and kind of bush management organisations in Australia do have large roles for Indigenous communities, but I think that some ecologists in this case have been pointing out that we do need to engage more with Indigenous knowledge as a way of appropriately caring for country. But that's kind of, this is one part of broader environmental news going on in Australia at the moment. We've also had a report from some researchers out of ANU, UNSW and the University of Melbourne that for the first time they've been able to link a fossil fuel project to the individual deaths that are likely to occur as a result of the project. So doing a study into the effects of Woodside's Scarborough gas project off Western Australia, the study found that it would lead to 484 additional heat-related deaths in Europe alone this century and kill about 16 million additional corals on the Great Barrier Reef during each future mass bleaching event. So, yeah, I think this is a pretty groundbreaking piece of information, because usually when we're talking about the environmental costs of fossil fuel projects, we tend to be talking in aggregate terms and looking at kind of the macro effects. But this study has managed to actually quantify the real lives that are going to be lost as a result of this. So super interesting.
Yeah, and the I mean, it's good. They're appealing to European lives. So yeah. Hopefully makes the institutions care, I guess, in a really cynical way. You recorded some audio from an event at Woodside Monash that we're going to play.
Yeah.
We'll hear from Professor David Karoly. And then, what's her name?
Basha Yajman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, quite a few. So at Monash University, the University Stop Woodside Monash campaign held an event with a bunch of experts and speakers advocating for the removal of Woodside from Monash's campus. They currently fund a building on Monash's campus and make financial contributions to Monash. So this discussion was about the kind of disastrous impact that the expansion of Woodside's project this year will have on the environment, and kind of essentially how dirty of a business and company Woodside is, and we should really not want to have anything to do with them as a country.
I'm going to start by acknowledging the Bunurong people on whose lands we are meeting now, because Bunurong country is part of, or should I say Monash University is part of, Bunurong country across southeast Nam. And when we talk about climate variations and climate change, the traditional custodians of the lands across Australia, the many different parts of the freshwater country, the saltwater country, and the land country across Australia, there is only one continuous Indigenous civilization which has survived from the last ice age thousands of generations ago. More than 60,000 years ago, they have lived sustainably and managed country, freshwater country, saltwater country, and land country through the change from the last ice age to the current interglacial period, relatively warm period. And they've survived and managed country through 5 degrees of global warming over 10,000 years. Port Phillip Bay used to have kangaroos roaming across what was the remnants of the Yarra River. And you could walk from Melbourne to Tasmania, as the Indigenous peoples did. They survived 100 metres of sea level rise, 5 degrees of global warming over 10,000 years. The only problem now is that there are some businesses like Woodside who want to accelerate climate change and global warming, not over 10,000 years. They want to continue to extract ancient fossil fuels like coal, like oil, and fossil gas, which they describe as natural gas, but it's fossil gas that they're extracting, and it will lead to rapid warming over the next 20 years and the next 100 years. What we know is that Woodside is keen to make profits, not keen to pay taxes, and wants to minimise the impacts on its profits. It is keen on greenwashing, which is hiding the impacts of their business on all people in Australia and all Indigenous communities. We know how to manage country if we listen and learn from the Indigenous peoples across Australia. We must not listen to the greenwashing that Woodside is sending as part of educational programs on the notional benefits and needs for fossil fuels in Australia, The only need we have to make is to stop extracting 50 million year old fossil fuels from underground, exposing them in the atmosphere, accelerating global warming. Most people hear that carbon dioxide is the biggest contributor to global warming, and that is the case at present. Every time you burn oil, it produces more carbon dioxide. Every time you burn fossil gas, it releases and converts into carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is the biggest contributor to global warming for the next 100 years. But Woodside doesn't tell you that every ton of fossil gas that is extracted by Woodside and then leaks into the atmosphere is 80 times worse per ton than carbon dioxide for the next 20 years. Fossil gas extraction by Woodside is much worse for global warming in Australia and around the world. It's not caring about the impacts on global warming, it's caring about maximising its profits and digging up more fossil gas and selling it. The only problem with the current government that was elected with a climate action policy is the first climate action they did was to approve the North West Shelf gas processing project as soon as they got re-elected. What that North West Shelf means and the extraction of gas and processing by Woodside is there's a law that the government approved through Parliament in 2022, a Climate Change Act, which set in law that Australia needed to have zero emissions by 2050. That would be fantastic, but it's too late, too slow, and not fast enough to limit global warming and prevent the adverse impacts. So what we need to do is also recognise that the first action by the new federal government after they were elected in 2025 now makes zero emissions by 2050 in Australia impossible. Why? Because they've approved Woodside and the North West Shelf gas processing plant to be extended not till 2050, till 2070. And many of you will be still alive in 2070, I hope, and you will be experiencing the massive extra global warming due to the emissions from Woodside. So it's critically important that you all sign on to the Stop Woodside at Monash commitment now to prevent Woodside causing more global warming and presenting misinformation to school kids who get the information package on the values of fossil fuels. And the only value of fossil fuel is keeping it underground where it's been for 50 million years. That's where it needs to stay. And you need to sign that Woodside needs to, and Monash needs to stop the Woodside partnership immediately this year. Thank you.
I do want to acknowledge that I'm going to be talking about my experience as a South Asian person, but while a lot of us do demand visibility and to be heard and to talk about intersectional climate justice, I want to acknowledge that there's really no justice without Indigenous justice, and we are meeting on stolen land today. So I started in the climate movement in 2019. 350,000 people marched across this country and called for climate action. We skipped school, we did all of that. I spent so many hours in meetings, and I'm sure Karina, I know you did as well. And a lot of us still do that. And instead of actually listening to us or taking into account, you know, what we're calling for, I think Monash decided to enter into the partnership with Woodside like at the very end of 2019 or at the start of 2020. So it's just a bit like, I don't know how that happened. And it's the same with the government. The government has continued to approve new fossil fuel projects. In May this year, our wonderful new Environment Minister Murray Watt approved Woodside's Northwest Shelf Gas Project. Shame. And this not only produces an eye-watering amount of emissions, but also sits next to what is considered as the most significant indigenous rock art in the world. And Murray Watt was there lobbying against the recognition of it as a World Heritage Site. Luckily, it did get World Heritage recognition, and hopefully we can actually move forward and make sure that it's protected. But this site is so, so important. And just days before receiving approval, Meg O'Neill, the CEO of Woodside, Australia's largest independent dedicated oil and gas company, said she basically blamed it on young people. She said that instead of looking at fossil fuels as bad and renewables as good, we need to think about our consumption because we're on sites like Timu. So instead of actually thinking about the systemic impact that corporations like Woodside have, apparently it's our fault because we're on Timu and Shein. And none of this is about ideology, because young people like myself, and I feel like most people here, do actually recognize the impact on carbon emissions. Just this morning, I was chatting to somebody about flights, and oh my gosh, should I take the 12-hour, 13-hour train ride to Sydney instead? And it's those kinds of conversations that we're forced to have because corporations like Woodside think that what they're doing is actually for the good of the country. And what's really interesting is that Market Forces did some analysis, and they found that to reach Woodside's current emissions, it would take every single young Australian purchasing 4,888 t-shirts per year. So that's the level of impact. Each of us here would have to buy almost 5,000 t-shirts. And a 2017 report found that 70% of carbon dioxide emissions worldwide come from just 100 companies. And since 1988, just 100 companies have been responsible for 71% of the emissions. Shame. And now there's so many statistics out there, and I could just keep regurgitating all this incredible data that we have. But I think a lot of the time these stats actually take out the human impact, because climate change actually affects us as individuals in our daily lives. Over the last few months, we've actually heard about the floods in Australia. And of course, we had bushfire season 2019, 2020. We've heard about the floods in Florida and, of course, the heat waves in UK. But what about the unbelievably hot heat waves in India and Pakistan in 2024 and 2025? These heat waves that usually start in May and June began in April with record-breaking temperatures. And these conversations about impacts in South Asia are generally left behind. People seem to think that if it's affecting Europe or Australia or the US, it's front and center, it makes the media headlines. But what about the rest of the world? South Asia is one of the most climate vulnerable regions. And the Australian Defence website actually says that more than 750 million people in South Asia have been impacted by one or more climate related disasters in the past two decades. And so the Australian government's clearly aware of what they're doing. Last month and the month before, India and Pakistan were demolished by floods. In just 2 days, 307 people died and 23 were injured in Pakistan. There's several missing in the region of Kashmir. And Pakistan's Disaster Management Authority actually estimated this year's monsoon season to be 65% more intense than last year. And that's purely because of climate change. And similarly, in India, they've said that that's what's happening with these heat waves, that they are being fueled by climate change. And so my mom grew up in Bengaluru, a city in India, which she said used to be called the Garden City. I've been there a few times and I don't know if I'd call it that anymore. Every time I visit, the heat is much stronger, the air feels dirtier, and all this is air pollution and climate change, and corporations like Woodside constantly putting their interests and short-term profits over people across the world. And my favorite memory going to India is actually this amazing cultural museum called Janapada Loka. And it's really pretty, tall, lush trees, like grass fields, everything. And I remember it being there with my cousin when she was 3. And now when I think about going to India and when I think about going to that site, I'm always like, I wonder if it's still there, because India has faced so many climate impacts and much of this is just not seen. And I worry about, you know, my 12-year-old cousin now growing up breathing that air that is being polluted by these large corporations. And if Bengaluru was a garden city and had all that lush greenery, what does it mean for the rest of India? And I know that these communities in India and Pakistan and Afghanistan actually contribute the least to climate change but are affected the most, and their voices need to be part of the conversation when we talk about corporations like Woodside. It's not just Australia that's facing the impact, but you can actually see the solidarity between Indigenous communities here and in India as well, who have been resisting corporations like this for decades. But what it tells us is a fossil fuel industry is a colonial project. It's creating divisions with communities and destroying Indigenous land, claiming to create jobs and cheapen our energy bills, when we know that the cheapest energy will not be coming from fossil fuels. And despite this, Woodside has found its allies in the Murdoch media, the government, and apparently institutions like Monash, which decided to partner with Woodside in the name of sustainability. Let's move forward and create more gas. And Woodside is supported by myths and points of deflection like Meg O'Neill, who blame young people, and the narrative that Australia's emissions don't really matter because India and China don't understand environmentalism. But environmentalism in India actually dates back to decades ago with the Chipko movement, where they were known as the tree huggers because they were trying to stop deforestation. And it really does come to us, unfairly, but rightly so, that we break these myths and recognize that countries like Australia and the institutions in Australia, like this university, have a big responsibility to lead the transition to renewables and not proudly talk about their partnerships with fossil fuel companies. And if anything, after graduating from a 5.5-year long law degree from UCID, I can say that I wish I was more proud to say that I went to UCID, but with their own investments in fossil fuels, with the repression of protest on campus, I can say that it feels a little bit embarrassing. And I feel like a university like Monash, which actually did announce divestment in 2016, but has clearly backtracked, they'd probably want their students to feel proud about attending this university, calling themselves an alum. And as Amanda said, universities have been central for protests and activism, shaping minds and fostering progress. A partnership with Woodside is literally the antithesis to that. All I can say is that, you know, this turnout right here is clearly something to be proud of, and that building there isn't. I get that it's sustainable, but also we can take the name out. So that's all I want to say, and thank you so much for listening.
BCR Community Radio, giving voice to the community since 1976.